Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
How do we keep that balance where we have so many things going on in the moment, and how do we take this conscious effort of like taking a pause and replying to something?
I would say you need to create your own distance. First, you need to get centered inside before, and then so you can create that distance, because unfortunately we can't control what's going on in the world outside of us. So working on self first so that you can create space so that you can actually allow your brain and your emotions and your being to react constructively. And that could be breathing, that could be putting it down, that could be going for a walk, that could be asking yourself some questions, and then choosing to respond or not respond with all that full awareness.
What I analyze from everything that you're saying, it all comes back to your awareness, and it all comes back to some of the most fundamental things that you can do to start your day, which will give you the power then to reflect and to understand what's going on. We spoke about, you know, all these states. One of the states that I think is increasing in the world, especially even after the pandemic, is loneliness. Do you see loneliness to be a big problem in the future?
It's more something that's coming from within. It's a loneliness because you can be in a sea of people and still feel totally alone. It's all within you. Like, it's you are your biggest limitation and your biggest ability.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Shift with CJ podcast. Today I'm excited to introduce Taylor Elizabeth to you. Taylor is amazing. She's got so much wisdom. She is an award-winning emotion intelligence etiquette coach and also an image advisor with over 13 years of global experience. She is a licensed life coach, emotional intelligence coach, NLP practitioner, positive psychology coach. She's done so much, but a lot of her wisdom comes from ancient knowledge, comes from Buddhist principles. And I wanted to bring her on the show so she can teach us how to master etiquettes, how to master communication, and how to master emotional intelligence, which a lot of people are lacking in today's world. So I'm super excited to have Taylor because she is one of UAE's most inspiring women entrepreneurs of 2023. Taylor, Elizabeth, finally, welcome to the Shift with CJ podcast. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you. In fact, we've been talking for almost a year now.
At least,
that we should
yes.
record a podcast together. At least, yeah. But today's the day, so I'm so yes. happy. Taylor, we're living in a busy world, okay? We have so many competing demands. We have advertisers that are competing for our attention. We have messages, we have commitments, and everyone wants to reach out to us, especially with the exciting times with technology. We're so reachable all the time. And sometimes it creates a lot of confusion in the brain. Mm-hmm. Due to this, people react in ways sometimes where they shouldn't do, in terms of sometimes people get angry, sometimes people get frustrated, and they might respond on social media or comment on something online, which can either jeopardize their reputation in the act of the moment, mm-hmm. or make other people who are reading that comment or that statement feel a bit negative about this person.
Sure.
How do we keep that balance where we have so many things going on in the moment, and how do we take this conscious effort of like taking a pause and replying to something?
Yeah, thank you so much for this question. So actually, before you got into breaking that down at the end, I thought, okay, I have to answer this in two parts, because there are two parts here. There's the outside world, and then there's your inside world.
Mm-hmm.
So as an emotional intelligence coach and as an etiquette coach, so you approach both in this question. As an emotional intelligence coach, I would say you need to create your own distance. First, you need to get centered inside before, and then so you can create that distance, because unfortunately, we can't control what's going on in the world outside of us in any way or shape or form, positively or negatively. We can't control it. So all the demands that are upon us, or people that are asking for our attention, or stressors, or things that are happening, we cannot possibly control that. We seek to, but we can't, unfortunately. So working on self first so that you can create space so that you can actually allow your brain and your emotions and your being to react constructively in a way that serves you, that's resourceful to you, right? So that's the second part. So how do we do that first? How do we create this sense of peace and calm? I know from your show and from speaking with you and being a friend that it really starts with health of self, right? Mm. So we're going to talk a little bit about mental health here in the sense of I am not a mental health practitioner. I'm an emotional intelligence coach. Mm. I'm a certified person, positive psychology coach, but I am not a mental health practitioner. So I'm not speaking to anybody that has like depression or any of these kind of issues, but just in general, how to manage and create space. So it's becoming very aware of what's going on within you. Mm. But in order to even focus on that, which nobody wants to do, by the way. Nobody wants to look within themselves. It's a very unnatural thing. Because it is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I mean, sitting with yourself is really uncomfortable. In fact, they've done many different tests where people will actually shock themselves versus, you know, actually
using their phone.
Right. They'll shock themselves or they will inflict physical pain within self rather than just sit with yourself for 10 minutes in silence, because then the brain starts going and you can't, and it's kind of like a free for all, which is exactly what's happening. So if everything's coming outside, the stress is all coming outside, and that's also how your brain is going on the inside. Mm-hmm. There's nothing is going to be productive that comes out of that. You won't be able to control the reaction that you want later when you're on social media, for example. So the first thing is to be able to create that space within yourself. And that means looking within yourself and figuring out what's going on. So to create that space, the biggest thing I can say to anyone is figuring out different tools and techniques to do that. I think meditation is the number one. Now, meditation, it looks very different in many different ways. I say meditation and some people immediately, they envision like somebody like cross, like, yeah, exactly, zen out or whatever. It actually doesn't have to be that way at all. Meditation is just a moment of, ideally, coming from a Buddhist philosophy, from a Buddhist background, it is actually not having any thought. And it doesn't mean that you have... It doesn't mean that nothing comes into your mind. It means that you are not, you acknowledge, you're aware, but you let go, if you will. You don't have any attachment to whatever is going on in the mind. Mm-hmm. And you just like let it float in, float out. As you practice this, it becomes much easier just to not be nothingness, but just to have, it will just be space once you practice it long enough. When I say meditation to some people, they're like, okay, well, I have somebody talking to me. Somebody has to think. I need to become like, you know, in a yogi kind of state. Mm-hmm. But your meditation can be just sitting in calmness. Mm-hmm. It can be listening to a frequency, for example. This is actually really good. Certain frequencies that can help with the brain. It can be walking, which is also something that I do and I really love to do. It can be walking in nature in the morning or in whatever kind of environment that you can find that's peaceful and calm. That can be your meditation. Whatever it is, it's allowing yourself space. That's the most important thing, so that you can process whatever's going inside you. Then there's a moment, so before we even leave our homes or even before we leave our bedrooms in the morning or wherever it is that we're sleeping, you want to give yourself that space. So the meditation is great, but also then acknowledging where you are that day without judgment. So the without judgment part is the hardest part, because we as human beings, judgment is an essential survival tool. We have to be judgmental in the sense of friend or foe, good or bad, survival or not survival. So it's we're hardwired a little bit this way. Intellectually and intelligently, we can override that and know it. This is the awareness. This is the awareness that we can develop within ourselves. But once you've allowed space, and then you can sit with the how you're feeling. So maybe you're not feeling great today. And that doesn't need a judgment. It just is. So accepting that, okay, this is not great. So today may not be my best day. I'm not going to set myself up for giving myself a total like, okay, slack today. I can do whatever I want. I can behave however I want because I know it's not going to be a great day. But maybe I'm going to give myself more grace. I'm going to give myself more compassion today. I'm going to maybe set my goals and objectives in a full awareness of what's going on within me and the emotions that I'm going through as well. So you process the emotions without judgment, with acknowledgement, with space, with centering, before you even confront that outside world. Now this sounds like a hefty practice, like you need hours or something like that, but really honestly you don't. It's that our minds are incredible as you're very well known, like, that's an incredible thing. So really just give yourself, I mean, I think meditation like 10 minutes, not even
first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning, always first thing in the morning. If you can, first thing in the morning, You can do red light therapy also, mm-hmm. which is great. So when I meditate in the morning, I use grounding. I do it on a grounding mat. Mm-hmm. I use red light therapy mm-hmm. in the morning, not every day, but mm-hmm. about four times a week or so, mm-hmm. four or five times a week. And I do meditate every day, mm-hmm. but I focus and I do it for minimum 15 minutes mm-hmm. for me. If I have a great morning where I have nothing on my schedule and mm-hmm. I can allow, then I will do it for 45 minutes, 1 hour, depending mm-hmm. on how much time I have. I meditate. I use a guided meditation sometimes. Sometimes I just, again, do the trying to focus on what comes to mind and allowing to let it go. Just being mm-hmm. in the center, thinking about the third eye, focusing mm-hmm. on the third eye and just being in breathing and things like that. And then after that, just allow, like, how am I feeling today? How's my physical self feeling? How's my mm-hmm. mental self feeling? With observation mm-hmm. and without judgment. So that way I'm in the best place I can be when I move out. Now, there's a lot of spiritual and emotional things there. Mm-hmm. The logical, rational things is if you come to consciousness about something, you're mm-hmm. aware of something, then you're able to do more with that. Mm-hmm. It's a very rational, logical thing. You're aware that mm-hmm. I'm not actually great today. And so I'm going to be realistic and pragmatic about the way I approach today. So I always approach this in two ways because mm-hmm. this is also very much my personality. It's emotional, spiritual, and very pragmatic about it. Like, let's have some tools. Mm-hmm. So these tools are, if you've given that space and if you've given them the mindset and the awareness and the non-judgment, and you're going to go out onto social media because mm-hmm. that's what hits us first usually, yeah. right? So we pick up our phones. We shouldn't, right? We should actually not be on our phones for like 30 minutes at least mm-hmm. in the morning to give ourselves some space. But imagine we get on our phones after we've done all that. And then the first thing is social media and something is triggering you. So now that you've worked on your triggering is not necessarily a bad thing, by the way. It just means it's elevating something. There's a reaction within yourself.
An emotion, perhaps?
It's an emotion. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. an emotion. It's a response to something. Mm-hmm. So saying, we'll work on the negative because we were focusing on the negative here, but mm-hmm. there's a negative like response to something. Now you've done the work before, so you've meditated mm-hmm. and you're centered and you realize, okay, you gauged like where you are today and say today's like let's say it's a mediocre day. It's not a great one. You're not, for whatever reason, and mm-hmm. you've given yourself grace with that. So you know that when you're reading that message and that trigger comes in, mm-hmm. that response, emotive response comes in, you decide that you're going to well regulate this because you have the consciousness. So we've been talking about some process of emotional intelligence. So the first one is self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So what's going on? That's what that first step was. The second part is emotional regulation, which is what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So the emotional regulation is that you know that you're not approaching this in the most amazing set of, and you're not the most amazing self to approach mm-hmm. this. And you know that you're being triggered because you're aware of it. Mm-hmm. So then you make a choice. This is the rational, pragmatic thing. You make a choice to know that maybe either you shouldn't answer that right now. Mm-hmm. You should take a step back. You should use some kind of technique to get yourself centered and to try to bring yourself back into a more balanced way of approaching it or emotionally regulated approach. Mm-hmm. And that could be breathing, that could be putting it down, that could be going for a walk, that could be asking yourself some questions, that could be leaning into what is triggering me about this, like mm-hmm. what is the emotive response? There's many different things you can do. And then choosing to respond or not respond with mm-hmm. all that full awareness. So again, we have the emotional, the mental, the spiritual parts all mm-hmm. kind of working together. And then being aware of it mm-hmm. because, you know, this impacts things. This is the last part of your mm-hmm. question, which was this impacts your personal brand. This is mm-hmm. what we're talking about. This impacts the way that you're seen. We're very much a part of cancel culture right now. Mm-hmm. So, or at least we were, I think we're onto a different word now, mm-hmm. whatever we're calling it now, but it's this, you may be the most wonderful human being. Something comes out because we're human. We mm-hmm. make mistakes. We are emotive. We mm-hmm. are responsive. We are complex individuals. We're not robots. Mm-hmm. We're an AI, like we're in the AI world right now, but we're not robots. You know, mm-hmm. this is the wonderful thing about humanity is we're not. We have responses, and maybe it wasn't our best moment, and mm-hmm. maybe we didn't do that emotional regulation, and we weren't aware of self, and we respond. And now, for some reason, because unfortunately, people love to pick up on this. This is mm-hmm. everywhere, right? So in order to avoid getting yourself in that situation and being really, really aware is when you're in that state and you know that you're not in a great state mm-hmm. and you know that you're being triggered about something, this is where the using those skills, the emotional mm-hmm. regulation skills, and then going into this another part of emotional intelligence, which is our motivation. So what's mm-hmm. going to drive us? What's driving us to respond in mm-hmm. that particular case? Is it emotive, mm-hmm. totally in trigger response? Is it because I feel like there's some damage here and it needs to be done, or it's incorrect information? Okay, and then ask yourself, how can I respond mm-hmm. in a way that is most resourceful to me? Now, we talk about resourceful and we talk about that's serving me. Mm-hmm. Both those words people think are selfish words often. They have especially what's serving me. Yeah, particularly, right? It has a negative connotation. So the serving thing, it's negative connotation. Mm-hmm. It means it's like selfish or whatever. But if you are doing something, all the efforts you're doing in your personal life, your professional life, you're trying to put something out there. Hopefully it's constructive, unless you're doing something really terrible for the world. It's constructive. Serving is that it is something that is able to allow you to be the best version of yourself, allow you to achieve what you need to achieve, allow you to positively contribute to society or whatever it is that you're doing, or your career or your passion or whatever. So it's more, is everything I'm doing here being resourceful to me? Is it helping me achieve what it is I want to achieve? Mm-hmm. So ask yourself these questions. What's driving me? Is this a motive response? And then what's the motivation of me responding? Is it to fix something? Is it to just get it out there? Because I've got all this frustration and anger. And then decide what to do from that response. Now, because you did your meditation and because you're aware of your emotions, you have the space to be able to at least ask yourself those questions. This is a journey. So if people hear me say these things and they're like, oh yeah, okay, sure. But like it happens in, you know, it happens in like 1 second. No, people like it. You know, but this happens in 1 second. Anger, frustration, response, trigger, this all happens within seconds. But our brains are incredible things, right? They're the most amazing machine ever. They can be not taught, but just it's almost not reprogrammed either. Although I do like kind of like the idea of it, but not reprogrammed. Mm-hmm. They just, you can suggest, you can give them new pathways. You can give them new protocol, right? Mm-hmm. We'll say it's a protocol for the way to process things so that it gives you every time one more second. And all you need, all your brain needs is 1 more second to get a hold of the emotion, to get a hold of the response so that you can be most productive in when you're responding to these things. So you don't say something you don't want to say, and it gives you that space so that you can control it better.
Wow. That's a lot,
it is a lot
to think about, but it all, what I analyze from everything that you're saying, it all comes back to your awareness.
Yes.
And it all comes back to some of the most fundamental things that you can do to start your day.
Yes.
Which will give you the power then to reflect and to understand what's going on. Because even if you meditate for 10 or 15 minutes, it would drive blood flow into the parts of the brain which are more logical, okay? And driving more blood flow with repetition, doing it every day, you know, a few times per day while you're walking. I know in Zen Buddhism, they even like would mop the floor and that's a meditation for them. They would pick up the stones, that's a meditation for them. So every time you get chances of practicing or getting into this altered state, which we call the alpha brainwave state, you are kind of earning those extra seconds and those extra seconds of like, hey, in this moment, I have a choice to respond. How am I going to respond?
Yes.
Okay. Super interesting. Also, one of the other things that you said, it takes so much. Like Disney, or research by Disney, they said once that it takes about 37 magic moments to compensate for one tragic moment.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people, they forget about this. And then this could end up, you know, sabotaging relationships, your personal branding, all of those things. And anger is also interesting. Like, you know, you said in a second, we could be angry, we could be frustrated.
Yes.
I think they did some surveys and they said like, an average person experiences anger about 3.5 times per day.
Yes.
And the question is, you could experience that emotion, which is natural. It's okay to experience it.
Yes.
How fast are you going to switch into a different emotion, which serves you or your community or the place or the task that you're doing the best?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I think also it makes you a really interesting question to talk about anger, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess anger in particular, anger is an emotion unlike sadness, unlike frustration, unlike stress, unlike anxiety, which are all for some reason acceptable in the sense of you hear that word and you don't, at least in Western culture, you don't reject. Yeah. You don't reject like, okay, this is an okay emotion. It's not sadness is not something, oh, yeah, let's be sad today. It's not like an objective, but it's okay. Anger is often one where people are like, you can't be angry or it's bad. Anger is a bad emotion. So I wonder how many of these people that are angry 3 times a day understand exactly, are they okay with being angry? And then do they allow themselves or do they just full on reject it? Like, do they allow themselves to process it or not? Because anger is actually one of those things which it's actually telling you something. It's a very good communicator, anger. It's it's telling you something. It's a good indicator of something, whatever's going on within you. And it wants change. Anger wants change. It wants response. But do we actually acknowledge, accept, like the first thing I said, do we allow ourselves to accept that this is what it is and then to be as resourceful and serving you as much as possible from that if you process the emotion? Or do you just reject it? See, the rejection of it, I think, keeps it, what it does is it buries it, doesn't, then it just builds, and then you have more and more and more and more. And just like you said about the brain, bringing more oxygen to certain parts of the brain and bringing, train like a muscle, you're training yourself. You're also training yourself to just suppress this, and then it builds and builds and builds and builds, and so you're redirecting energies towards that versus towards solving the problem and becoming healthier.
And this could also get people sick in the long run. Yes. We see a lot of diseases that come out of that, you know, energy being manifested in different organs.
Yes.
Traditional Chinese medicine systems are completely about this. They talk about anger, guilt, shame, all of these translating into different diseases. We spoke about, you know, all these states. One of the states that I think is increasing in the world, especially even after the pandemic, is loneliness. Do you see loneliness to be a big problem in the future?
Isolation? Like, and by loneliness, we mean like non-emotional connection.
Yes, a lot of people are connected to a lot of people, right? Like now there are so many people, they have work colleagues and, you know, they go to the gym or they go everywhere, but a lot of people are not able to build real connections with them.
Yes.
Yeah, on people who are surrounded by people can also feel lonely.
Yeah, of course.
And this is what we're seeing with a lot of new surveys, that a lot of younger people especially, they mention that they feel lonely all the time. Some countries of the world, like Japan, these countries are facing higher levels of loneliness. What's your take on loneliness? How do you see it?
I mean, I do... loneliness, I mean, I think you can... Exactly like what you said, I think loneliness is... It's not a lack of those around you. It's not an actual... I mean, in some cases, it may be full isolation. I mean, there are people that are lonely because they are so isolated from other human beings. But the probability of that, considering our world population and everything right now, it's quite low, right? Especially where we're living, especially where I'm often traveling to as well. So it's more... not a state of mind like you're making it up in your mind either. But it's more something that's coming from within. It's a loneliness because you can be in a sea of people and still feel totally alone. It's a question... Yeah, and I agree. It's a growing problem. We're always going to refer to COVID as making it worse because that made the physical part of it worse. But it basically took something that was already existing, which is strains in concept of community, strains in concept of emotional connection, that keep those bonds. One of the great things for longevity, right, is community,
social connections
and community, right? So it basically took that and it was impossible, at least in the original way of thinking, it was impossible. And which I also still think we need the physical, like in-person connection as human beings. I mean, we are like, we were wired. I think we need it still, because even Zoom calls is not going to do the exact same thing, you know, but like, it's important to have those things. And I think COVID just kind of showed that it was already really fragile. And that when you removed any possibility of that happening organically in person, or at least like potential of it, then it got worse, kind of a thing. And also things became more where it was much easier to keep that state where we kept ourselves isolated, physically isolated more than not, or allowed ourselves more space. It also affected our social skills, which is a big part of this. I think there's two elements of it. The one is within self. So again, it always starts with self. I mean, I'm probably going to... This one is going to get old probably soon, the idea, but it always starts with self. So it's not to...
So look within you before you look outside.
Always. No, always look within ourselves because you are, and we hear this all the time. People hear it. There are quotes about it throughout the ages. We're talking about, I mean, we're talking, if we go back to one of my favorites, as you know, Rumi, one of my favorites, it's like us 800, almost 800 years now. It's like things that are quoted then are so relevant now. One of them is that it's all within you. Like it's you are your biggest limitation and your biggest ability. It's all within yourself. It's a choice. These are all choices within ourselves. So it starts within you. So it's not, it's in the isolation, and if you feel alone, it's figuring out, I mean, why are you feeling alone? And it's made, now again, it could be because of many different things, depression, anxiety, things mm-hmm. of this nature. It could definitely be related to that. Mm-hmm. And I am not dismissing that at all. But if it comes to, is it because you aren't defining idea of self well? So mm-hmm. this idea of self, like who am I kind of a thing, not who am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to achieve? What mm-hmm. is my legacy? None of that, but actually like who I am, like I'm, are you giving yourself value in that? Mm-hmm. Do you have self-limiting beliefs as to who you are mm-hmm. or how people see you or how you are valued? Like, are you starting with that? Then we could mm-hmm. be here all day talking about those different mm-hmm. topics, but like, what is your self-esteem? Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll link it to that. What is your self-esteem? Mm-hmm. What is your,
is there a number that a person can give themselves, like 0 to 10?
What's, I mean, there are scales of it. Okay. If there are scales for mm-hmm. for your self-esteem as a practitioner or as mm-hmm. a coach, when I work with clients about self-esteem, which self-esteem and self-confidence are different things, related but different things. Mm-hmm.
How are they different? Sorry to cut you. But.
Yeah, no. Confidence. So self-confidence is what you're projecting out there. It's like an outside inside thing. Mm-hmm. Self-confidence is when you take good self-esteem, mm-hmm. how you value your values, your inner self, your inner situation, and your ability to project outward, mm-hmm. right? So your self-confidence is your ability to achieve, to attain, to, mm-hmm. and by the way, achieve and attain, I'm not attaching to success, money, or any of those things. Mm-hmm. It just means you set yourself to do something. And that literally could be the easiest thing. It could mm-hmm. be, I'm going to go meet someone today, and you actually do it. Like, yeah. this is the achievement.
It could be going for a hike or something. Anything. Mildly uncomfortable.
Anything. And I think that's another thing, another topic for probably another podcast, is mm-hmm. the way we evaluate mm-hmm. functioning in this world, in our life, is on such a scale that's running so fast and so hard and so high that we have to, in order to achieve, we have to be doing this. In order to say this is valuable, we have to be doing this. In order to say that this is actually of any value to me, it has to be on X, Y, and Z, which is, again, not rational, doesn't make any sense. It's not serving us in the sense of who's deciding what's achievement or not, what's mm-hmm. showing good self-confidence or not, what's showing good self-esteem or not. Because self-esteem, again, as I mentioned, is an internal value assessment, and the self-confidence is outside. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we are assessing our self-esteem, our value, our values, way we feel about self, those kind of a things. So that's your mm-hmm. self-esteem. So it starts with that. Is your loneliness coming from the self-esteem issues? Is mm-hmm. it coming because you're not setting boundaries? So whenever you're mm-hmm. around other people, that you're in these massive crowds of people, they're not your people. Mm-hmm. And they're not your people, maybe because you haven't worked enough on self to figure out who is this human being that I'm looking for. This is the spiritual part, right? Mm-hmm. And this is my Eastern part on this mm-hmm. one, is also the vibrations and the focus on self and the development of self and the growth of your emotions mm-hmm. and bringing that out. When you start working on that and you know who you are, that doesn't mean that you're at 100% every day. That doesn't mm-hmm. mean that you are like amazing, but you're comfortable with self, you mm-hmm. know, that's what it means when you vibrate at that level and that's the energy you're going to attract. So mm-hmm. you're going to attract other people that way. Mm-hmm. And if you're healthy at setting boundaries, so boundaries in this case, it means knowing when that energy with somebody else doesn't actually fit with mm-hmm. you. It vibrates or it doesn't vibrate. It's polarizing mm-hmm. or attracting. In that case, when it's inside and when you fix your energy and you're aware of it, then you're attracting it. Is it because you don't know what that is? It's because you haven't worked on self. And so you're attracting all these people around mm-hmm. you. That's not that. Is it a boundary that you're not setting? Boundary meaning like, I don't really want to be around these people, but I keep on saying yes, because I need to be around people for social reasons or because somebody I know invited me and like, I kind of like that person, but mm-hmm. maybe, I mean, have you really given it thought? Have you really done that? So you work on self inside first. Mm-hmm. And then outside is the skills. So mm-hmm. this is the skill part, like conversation, small mm-hmm. talk. Like some people are, especially introverts, which I love introverts. Yeah. So I'm actually, and I say this and I have a hard time, people are like, it's not possible, but I'm actually introvert. So when you take my test, I'm like slightly mm-hmm. into the introverted side, even though I seem very extroverted, but I'm actually quite on the introvert because I'm very much observing. I'm very much thinking about what's going on, like in analyzing things. I'm very much watching and seeing what's going mm-hmm. on. And I am interested in being in social situations, but I am very like selective about it. Not selective because I think I'm better, but because the energy thing that we mm-hmm. were talking about, right? And the boundaries and things of that nature. But for introverts, they have a hard time like the conversation. how to start a conversation, what to say, fear of rejection. Now, here we go into a bunch of different things. Fear of rejection, self-limiting beliefs, again, what they're going to say is not valued, they're not that interesting or that whatever, they don't know what, these kind of things. So you can develop those skills. You can develop those skills to go out and talk. So to build connections with other people, have, you know, learn how to engage with others, find something that you find in common so you can start to build community. And the last thing is the expectation that you put on yourself for loneliness. Loneliness is, I mean, it's a human condition, right? Where, I mean, we have days where maybe we feel lonely. There are periods in our, there are days where we feel all different things. Don't reject this. Like it's okay. Like it's okay. If you start seeing that it's having a negative effect on your life, if it's a, if it becomes a pattern where it's really, and it's draining you, it's, you're really, you feel like you're stuck in it, that's different. But if you have a moment of loneliness, it's okay. I mean, expect that it's going to be there, but then do something either internally or externally. Again, mentally, I know if there's all different ways that that choice of making a choice to do something about it internally or externally on your own valuation, meaning I talked before about how we're evaluating that. The success that you make in building relationships with others or building community, it should be on your evaluation scale, not on some scale of, well, my best friend is able to do X, Y, and Z, or look at the CEO, or look for, and we hear this all the time about, you know, some person at 40 was the first time they designed a dress, or the first time they built this, or the first time they acted in something. You see it on these big scales of success, but every day is built up of these small moments that get you through the day. So evaluate it that way. It goes a lot to what you were talking about the mindset before, about positivity, about the positive things. Like Disney said, you need so many positive things. If you're evaluating all of your behavior and your connections and the efforts you're making on a scale that is relevant to you, then you're much more able to succeed and develop positivity and develop positive emotions and develop positive relationships and develop that positive energy that attracts other people much more effectively and efficiently than if you're constantly comparing yourself to somebody else. Because comparing yourself on somebody else's scale is the quickest way to steal any joy from your life and like any kind of success. The quickest way.
You know? I love that. You speak to a lot of CEOs, you speak to a lot of corporate employees, you do a lot of trainings and workshops.
Yes.
One important part of training and one important part of managing and management is actually giving someone a feedback or some kind of criticism.
Yes.
Oftentimes, a lot of people do not take the criticism well. They don't take the feedback well. What does a manager or a senior manager do in such situations? How can someone make sure that whatever they're saying is being understood right? Because sometimes people would say things in a manner that might offend the other person. The person might have, you know, a cognitive dissonance where there are all these different thoughts going on in their mind and they don't understand it. So I want to hear from both sides. From the employee side, how does someone accept feedback and criticism? And from the employer or the manager side, how does someone give feedback or criticism?
Okay, so for the employees, for all of us, like, or even if you're self-employed, realizing that criticism, hopefully constructive criticism, let's hope it's constructive. We can, again, we cannot control anybody else's behavior, only our behavior and our reaction and our choices. That's all we can control. In self, inside self first and then outside. So if somebody is, if you're going in for some kind of a, evaluation, know going in that what's being evaluated of yourself is one part of self. So and the point of this is to take this opportunity to learn something about yourself, the other human being, or the situation. So you're going to learn something about your manager, you're going to learn something about yourself, and you're going to, the learning about yourself may be your ability to be able to listen and go through something very difficult. That may be it. Because everything that the manager may say, it may or may not be accurate. This is where it gets very gray. You don't really know. It could be. So to go in with the mindset of, I'm going to learn in this moment. This is a this is a learning opportunity for me, period. That will get your mind already in the right place to be able to listen to it. The other thing is too is active listening. Please listen to what's actually being said. When we don't listen to what's being said, hopefully this other human being is communicating in a way that's effective. It, again, we can't control that, but we can make the most out of it and to understand what's being said, or at least to get to the bottom of what's being said if we're actually listening, which means listening to understand, not to respond. very hard to do in an evaluative situation where you're being evaluated, where you're potentially receiving criticism. But if you go into it with the mindset of I'm learning and I'm going to listen, then if something's said to you by the manager that's not clear, comes across as triggering or whatever, you can always ask for clarification because you're trying to understand, not to just respond. So you may actually get to the heart of what they're saying, which may not be a criticism in the end. It just was communicated poorly. So you can do it. The other thing too is that when you're going through it, try to, as much as possible, separate this moment from your whole value of who you are as a human being. I think this is the problem, especially because our work is our life. We should be working to live, not living to work. Right? But we don't, that's not the case. And as an American, I can definitely say that's not the case. It's not my culture's case. But at the same time, try to separate the two. You are a multifaceted, there's many different parts of who you are. Even if, for those people that are parents, there's a lot going on there already. For those people that are, you're part of a family unit of some sort. You are a daughter, you are a son, you are an aunt, you are an uncle, you are a mother, you're a father, you're a grandpa, you're all these different things. Realize that there's value in all those different things. This is just one element of it. So keep that mindset when you're going into it. So it's a learning mindset. It's a keeping a barometer on what's really going on here, the value of what's happening, and that you're actively listening so that you really can understand. And then when the criticism is there, express appreciation. So this is the thing I always say about effectively communicating, especially in conflict. So when somebody is saying, you know, you say, you know, thank you for the acknowledge that they've said something. So they've been heard, which is a huge part of communication. Two is express what you feel, which is, you know, I appreciate, hopefully, please don't lie in this case, but I appreciate the feedback. I'm learning something. See, if you already go in, at least you're learning it. Even if you don't agree with it, ask if you need time or space to assess it. May I have some time to think about this and to reflect? I may have some additional questions. Or if you need to dispute something that was said, I'd like to offer some more clarity on that, to be as neutral about it as possible. And then, or if you're fine with it, just say, thank you so much. I really appreciate this time. I really appreciate the feedback. And then it's always a good idea as a employee to ask for ways that you can improve or to grow on this, or to take this to the next, if it was all positive, fantastic, like to take this to the next level, or how, what can I do to be improve even more? Yeah. That's the thing. As the other side of it, as the manager, be a conscious leader. That starts way before this, evaluation. I just had a really interesting Zoom conversation with a, global HR executive. He's in many different fields, actually in India, but it was like phenomenal to think about the process. You should not just be assessing your teams when it comes to that moment of their annual review. It should be a constant growing process. Conscious leadership is where you are aware of the importance of the team, where you are, it's not just about you as a leader, but it's about identifying, it's very emotional intelligence heavy, but identifying the strengths in your group, in your team, and supporting them and growing them. In order to do that, you need to provide feedback quite often. So create an environment where feedback is a regular thing. Constructive criticism and feedback is a regular thing. And be very conscious about the way in which you're delivering it. So you may have to deliver it differently to each person. Does this mean you have to handhold everyone? No, because it's unrealistic. And especially in large corporations, especially the ones that I coach in and work in, it's not realistic. But conscious of the way you're communicating and knowing that maybe you're meeting with someone who is a little bit more sensitive about something, or you can see. So this means knowing body language of people that you're reading it, mimicking the body language, sitting, don't sit too close to somebody. If you see that they're pulling away from you, when you give them the review, you know, you make sure that you're delivering things in a constructive manner, not critical manner. It should be constructive criticism, not critical, just flat out critical, and give them ways to improve. So empower them. So strength, give them, okay, this is what's going on. This is a challenge we're facing. This is how we can accomplish this. And this is what my expectation is. So you, and this is how we can support you to do it. So it's not just like, this is what's wrong and you've done a terrible job at this and this needs to be improved, but it's kind of like throwing them into the ocean and how are you expecting them to succeed? You're not consciously leading them through anything. So being conscious about it. So making sure that evaluation is part of the environment already, not just once a year. It's it's a constant support system. Yeah. When you're in there, again, using the same techniques, the active listening, being conscientious about how you're delivering the information, being aware of body language, and then when you are giving the criticism, bring awareness of what it is, how it needs to be changed, how you're going to be supportive of it, and how it's going to be assessed. So it's very clear. And then that way, when the next part comes up, the next assessment comes up, you can always reflect upon it, but then also there's an ability for them to grow and they feel supported in it, in this conscious leadership and conscious evaluation.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that could add so much value to people who are listening from both ends. You mentioned the word conflict. How often do you think people get into conflicts?
In a work environment?
In a work environment. Just generally, like in the work environments that, or like the people that you're training, do you see conflicts arising quite a lot? Is it a common practice in the workplace?
I see conflicts arising within people a lot, and I don't see conflicts coming out that often, like as in actual conflicts within an office. What you do see is you see a dysfunctional work environment or culture. That's that's how you see it manifested itself, where it's not being supportive. You see people not being able to make targets because of X, Y, and Z, because of, again, the dynamic within teams. You see that falling apart because there's a lot of internal conflict or a lot of frustration, a lot of resistance, resistance to change, resistance to working together as a team, miscommunications. I mean, most business loses, I guess in the United States, I think it's some huge number. It's like $100 million a year or something in miscommunication. It's just because of miscommunication. So you have people not meeting their goals. You have people not communicating well. You have all these things happening because of conflict that they have within themselves first. And then they don't know how to express it. They don't know how to communicate it or they just stop work, or they totally resist and they go inward and they just stop working as a team. And the whole thing of teams is that we're supposed to be working together. Mm. Otherwise be on that isolated island that we talked about before, you know, you're working with a team. So that takes quite a bit of effort. It takes a lot of commitment. But once it works well, and if everybody feels valued and seen and appreciated and that they're contributing to the whole of the team in their own way, then it works wonderfully and the communications work great. But if there's conflict or discord or disconnect or people withdraw, that's when you start to see problems. So I would say I see more of that, more issues with culture, more issues with teamwork, more issues with communications, more issues with professional issues than I do actually with conflict. Because usually the conflict is out there. And unfortunately, then in HR, what do you do with it? What do you do with that conflict? I mean, is it punitive in the punishment, or are you going to get to the core of what's really going on and try to figure out this is the EQ part. This is the EQ in leadership, which is a huge movement right now.
Taylor, I could keep talking to you forever, but you know, we're going to come to the end of this podcast.
Yes.
I have two questions for you.
Please.
Because we spoke about conflict in leadership and like in companies, how do we handle conflict in our own personal lives? Because I'm sure there are so many conflicts. You know, we spoke about someone being angry 3 times or 3.5 times per day. In couples, usually the statistics is about 19 conflict events per year. So conflict is a part of our life. What would be your quick tips to resolve any conflict that arises within relationships, within families, within our personal lives?
Be okay with conflict, the first. If the more resistance we have to actually, conflict is a normal part of being human beings. There's absolutely no way that you're going to get through life with conflict. It's just like anger. If we have a negative association with it, that it's not helping us in any way, shape, or form, or telling us something towards change, and we resist, then it's going to make it worse. Then we won't go anywhere. It just will sit there. The thing I would say is that when conflict comes up, try to lean into understanding what it is and use active listening. That's number one. In communicating is know self. So if you are somebody in conflict that needs that space because you need that, there are two different, well, there are many different ways people handle conflict. Let's just put it into two major groups. There's those people that need the space to process, and they need the time and space to process it, or those people that want right now to like deal with it. So figure out which one of those two things you are, and then figure out how to ask for that boundary in order to make it most successful and most resourceful for you. So and then ask for it. And if you are that type that wants to fix it right now, know that your partner, your life partner, your professional partner, your colleague, whatever it is, may not be that person. So use that time to acknowledge that after you've acknowledged it, and then use that time to figure out what's going on within you, so then you can come together and with an objective of solving the conflict, mm-hmm. or at least understanding each other on the conflict, because you may not be able to resolve it. That's the other thing too. This is the whole thing about coming okay with conflict, is mm-hmm. it may not be resolvable, but you can, if you put it out there, mm-hmm. you may be able to find something else that will come from it. Mm-hmm. And then at least, because the problem with conflict is not that it exists, it's that people don't acknowledge it, mm-hmm. and that it festers, and that it becomes unresolved in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there may not be a resolution, but the energy will go somewhere. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It will be redirected into something else that you can then solve. Mm-hmm. But if you don't ever address it and you don't acknowledge it, then it won't go anywhere and it will only fester and get worse.
Amazing. I've never heard someone explain it that way. So thank you. My last question to you is, if you had a time machine, I put you onto a time machine and you can go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Oh my gosh, I have thought about this so many times. I feel like, I would tell myself, usually my initial answer to this is always not to be so hard on myself. Mm-hmm. I would always be that. I would say it's probably going to still be that.
I would say, so don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, I would just say, that inner critic, mm-hmm. just don't turn
silence
it off.
That voice.
No, like, silencing it. I don't believe in silencing it, mm-hmm. because again, it's a very unnatural thing to do it, but you can mm-hmm. sit with it. I would like to sit with it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to sit with it and understand. I would like to understand her better, mm-hmm. like that voice. I don't want to silence it. Mm-hmm. Just like I don't want to silence my biggest cheerleader either, mm-hmm. or tell her like to tone it down. You know, I don't want to silence it. I just want to understand her, because I think mm-hmm. that she will have a better purpose to serve because I think being somebody, critical is a good thing. You need to have something mm-hmm. there, because that will keep you in the motivation, the growing, if it's in a resourceful way. So I would want to understand her better.
Amazing. Taylor Elizabeth, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find out more about you?
Okay, so on my Instagram page, which is The mm-hmm. Elegance Advisor. I also have a website as well, The Elegance Advisor as well. You can always reach me at taylor@theeleganceadvisor.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can go through Instagram DMs and mm-hmm. we can get a hold of me that way as well.
Yeah, we'll put all the details in the show notes. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, sharing your wisdom. And I can't wait to have you back again on the show, because there are so many things we can talk about.
So many things. Thank you so much.
Amazing. And this is me, CJ, your host, signing out of the Shift with CJ podcast. Everyone have a great day, a great week, a great lifetime ahead of you. And remember, listen to that inner critic. Try to understand him or her. Don't dismiss it. Take care. I'll see you in the next podcast. Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.